interesting aspect to the overall project was that the first section, having been built of Yall bricks, the rest of the houses were built of concrete blocks. Not only that, but the local urban council insisted that the blocks be cast and made on the site in order to increase the number of locals employed on the schemes.
I'm Jean Roach. I'm from Sarsfields Terrace. My mother was Margaret Esther and my dad was Connie Roach. I was born at number 24 Sarsfields Terrace in 1954. To my knowledge, my mum and dad moved to Sarsfields Terrace from Chapel Lane, I would imagine sometime in the 40s, because my grandfather moved up with them. His name was Michael Sporowe. He actually died at number 24, but I have no recollection of him. A lot of people who came after, they all came from Chapel Lane. And a story was once told of somebody coming from Chapel Lane, having been allocated a house in Sarsfields Terrace, was met by someone, but they were walking up the jail steps and they were carrying a big bucket of water. And the person who met him said, "You don't have to bring the water, there's actually water in the houses." And they were totally gobsmacked because they weren't used to running water. In 1956, my mum and dad moved up to number 74, where we live now. They moved in December because the houses at the top of Sarsfields Terrace were bigger houses. There were eight of us, plus our parents. Our grandfather had died. And I know for a fact that we're actually 66 years next December living in 74 Sarsfields Terrace, because my brother Martin, who was the youngest of eight of us, was born on the 2nd of January, 1957, when my mother and father had moved to number 74 Sarsfields Terrace. So we know for a fact that we're actually 65 going on 66 years in that house. But wonderful memories of growing up in Sarsfields Terrace. Obviously there was nobody rich. We got on our fathers were fishermen mostly. I do remember one time when my dad worked for a builder in town, but he gave up his job to go fishing. And that was about 1963. But what people didn't realise, that when they gave up their jobs to go fishing, if they caught no fish, there was no dole. They had no money until they got their first catch. But thankfully, the neighbours at that time were fantastic and everybody shared what they had. But there was also milk delivered from a farm down the road, Willie John's. He came with his horse and cart every Friday. You got milk straight from the cow. Obviously, Sonny Magan, they were great for delivering milk. And then there were lots of people who came from the country selling vegetables. And that happened every Friday. There was a Mr. Finn, I think, from Ballymacoda that came. And there was a man by the name of Mr. Kevin Cashman. And we always loved him in the autumn because he used to have apples. And when he'd drive up Sarsfields Terrace and every mother would come out and buy whatever vegetables she wanted and apples, but when he'd get to the top of Sarsfields Terrace, we used to follow him. And what apples he would have left in the back of the van, he would just throw them out onto the terrace and we'd all gather around and pick up all we could, you know. So there was great times there, you know. Out of nothing, we had great times. We were very young when my dad had been diagnosed with MS. He was only, I think, about 54. We didn't know, or I don't know if anyone knew what MS was at that time. The only advantage we saw in it is that he was in a wheelchair and we thought he was Ironside, you know? But, and you didn't have the services then that you have now. There were no home helps. My mother, God love her, you know, she was so great. She kept him at home all the time. And we all, did our bit with him as well. As the years went on, his illness became more difficult, but we dealt with it. And he died in 1976 at number 74 Sarsfields Terrace. And again, that was great support from the people around, and everybody was so good. Funerals in Sarsfields Terrace were something else. because when a person unfortunately passed away in Sarsfield Stairs, especially in the houses we live in, there were no funeral homes at that time. So at the removal, the coffin had to be brought out the window. Three different types of houses in Sarsfield Terrace. There's the end houses, and you have one block in the middle with the hallway as you go in the door, and then at the top there are the bigger houses. So therefore, they had the coffin doors at the top of the stairs, you know, just to allow for to make it easier to take unfortunately people who died out. When somebody would pass away, the removal left the house to the parish church at the time. But when the removal would be on, there would be two chairs brought out onto the footpath. So when the coffin came out, it was laid on the two chairs, and the candles would be brought out and put on top of the coffin, and there'd be prayers said. Now, I do remember as a child one gentleman who died, and it was bonfire night. And for some reason, I suppose I was inquisitive or whatever, but I kept asking, will he go to heaven because the bonfire was on down in the plot and the flames were reaching the sky? And I was concerned that the poor man couldn't go to heaven. I'm sure he did. If there was a marriage, when somebody would get married, and at that time it wasn't unheard of there was no hotels, they couldn't afford hotels for receptions. The reception may be held in the house. And I can remember like that we would gather, because the mother of the bride would usually come out with a handful of change and she'd throw it out onto the terrace. So, no, it was fantastic. Like. When we were young growing up, St. Raphael's was a no-go area. And as well as that, there weren't many local people worked there. All the staff in there were people from outside the town. It was a much bigger operation at that stage. So I do recall going up there when the nuns were there. When we got our first Holy Communion, you'd go up and go around, because as you look at St. Raphael's, as you go up Sarsfield Terrace, you're actually looking at the back of St. Raphael's. The front is at the other side. But I do remember going to the door and knocking on the door with others who got their first Holy Communion, and the nun would come out and she'd bring us into the hallway, and we'd get some orange juice and possibly some biscuits, which possibly we didn't get at home because they didn't have it, you know. And then going down through the years, people used to go to Mass in the church in St. Raphael's. But in order to be able to go to Mass in the church in St. Raphael's, our parents had to get a pass from the parish priest, because we were often sent to the, which would be the Red House now up on North Main Street where Canon Sheehan lived. And it was always in December, you'd be sent down there for the pass for your mam. I can still see the pass, and it had a stamp on it from the parish priest that allowed the person holding the pass to attend Mass in St. Raphael's. Other than that, you couldn't do it. So, but as time went on, then it became more public. And then it became a public church then for a long time, just before Holy Family Church was built. So it was. I remember saying to someone when my mam died, if I had had the option, I possibly would have had my mother's funeral from St. Raphael's Church, because she went there every Sunday for years upon years, you know. It's very sad to see the church closed there now, you know, absolutely. As years went on, I never thought it would happen to me, but I got a job there. And I worked there for, I think, about 21, 22 years. Absolutely fabulous time, in the sense that I loved the job and made great friends there and everything. But I initially said that there was no one from Yall worked there, but as time went on, that all changed. The amount of people from the town, and particularly from Sarsfield Terrace, that worked up there. And then we actually had a nursing director in St. Raphael's from Sarsfield Terrace, Angela, which still lives in the terrace. So things changed completely. Once you went to the top of Sarsfield Terrace and turned right or left, once you passed the last houses, either Mrs. Smith's or you said Lundergan's, but there was a Miss Grady lived there prior to that. But having said that, once you passed those houses, you were in the great wilderness, because there were no houses, there were no, the school wasn't there, the roads were so narrow. I always say, if you stretched out your arms, you touched a ditch on each side. I have here in front of me an electors list from 1943 and 1944, and it gives all the names of the people who lived in Sarsfield Terrace at that time. I'm not going to go through it all, but I was looking at it the other night, and it's very interesting to see that a lot of the names on it are still relevant to Sarsfield Terrace, because a lot of the next generations, they've stayed there and made their homes there, and just fantastic. But back in, I think, the early 1970s, when the council decided to sell off the housing stock, a lot of people then bought their houses, which was fantastic. And I know in our own situation, for the years of tenancy, there was a massive discount. So the houses weren't that very expensive to buy, because they got credit for all the rent they had paid down through the years. And it's nice to see that there are names on this register from 1943. And now we're in 2022, and there are still family members living in a lot of those houses, which was great to see. Growing up there, as we became, say, of age, I mean, school leaving was at 14. Most of us went to work, well, an awful lot of us went to work in the factories, which would be Seafield Fabrics, Blackwater Cottons. And walking out the back road, and the jobs were, I'll always remember, I went there in August 1968. I was 14, say on the 9th of August, but they were on holidays. And my sister Breda was there, and she had put a word in for me. And Mr. Troy was the manager at the time, so I got a job there, as did lots of other people. I think it was £3 and something a week. And as a 14-year-old, imagine, from 8 in the morning until 5 in the evening, from Monday to Friday, with a half an hour for your lunch. Now, that didn't bother us, because we thought it was fantastic. Lots of marriages then came from the factories. The top and the bottom of Sarsfield Terrace, there was great rivalry there. It wasn't bad now, but there was, like, and it was like the end of the terrace versus the top of the terrace. And a few years ago, I remember getting a new front door, right, in the house where we live now. And it was a red door, and I always wanted a red door. And a neighbour from the end of the terrace was passing up one day. And Jean, he said, your door is nice, I like that, yeah. And I said, yeah, I always wanted a red door. And then he looked in and he said, yeah, a red door for the Red City. Because Sarsfield Terrace had been called the Red City for whatever reason. I mean, apparently it was said that if you applied for a job somewhere, and when they saw your address as being Sarsfield Terrace, nothing happened, you know. But that was the way it was at that stage. But I was passing down the terrace there just after they had done the grotto, which is beautiful there now, absolutely gorgeous. And Billy By Drake was taking some pictures, and it happened to be right outside number 24 at the end of Sarsfield Terrace. And it didn't enter my head for a while, but I think I was in a hurry, and I said to Billy, no, I said, I won't stand. Oh yeah, he said, the top of the terrace again, you know. So in good humour now. So I walked, anyway, I carried on. But when I was coming up, I called Billy, and I said, Billy, I said, just one thing now about the photograph. I said, you said the top of the terrace. In actual fact, I said, I was standing outside the house where I was born. I said, at the end of the terrace. But so many families around that moved into Sarsfield Terrace, then they kind of moved along. They came up to the top. But that was only from a space convenience, because the houses were bigger. Now, if you can imagine the big families that were reared in those houses without a bathroom. The bathrooms weren't known at the time. I mean, you were lucky that you had an inside toilet. There were parents and there were families. And the families went anything, say, from 6, 7 up to 12, maybe. I mean, we're still in the same house and there are two of us and a dog, and I find the house a bit small. When we were kids growing up in Sarsfield's Terrace, you walk down the terrace at your own risk, because they'd be sitting out on the edge of the footpath, you know, and you'd be afraid to pass because somebody would pass some kind of a remark, you know, not badness, no, or anything. But I think the level of friendship and stuff like that has suffered. Another thing, and it's people's own choice. It is people's own choice. You'd go up and down the jail steps, say, on a Sunday for mass, and you'd meet everyone. You could do it today and you'd meet no one. You'd absolutely meet no one. As I said, it is people's own choice, but there's a sadness in it. In the latter years, the Lord of Mercy and Annie Lawton, who was Annie Crowley, she was the instigator of getting the grotto in the middle of the terrace that we used called Morty's. It was a basic play area at that time. And then the lads did a fantastic job 2 years ago in getting it all refurbished again. And thankfully, up to today, it is absolutely gorgeous, you know. And there's great credit due to them for that. Going back to our childhoods and successes, in Sarsfield's Terrace, when they resurfaced Sarsfield's Terrace and they had to take the top layer off and it went back down because Sarsfield's Terrace was always a concrete. And I remember a few of us remarked, my gosh, if the terrace could talk. Because on Sundays, there was the most fantastic hurling matches, not cricket, rounders and stuff like that. And as kids, when we'd be off school, we all had little shops. And the shop, you know, you'd go out in the morning, you'd bring out whatever you had, and you'd shout, shop open. And you know what our currency was? Broken glass. That was our currency. And then other kids, how much is that? That's 6 pieces of glass. But if you had coloured glass, it was more expensive.
That's right.
But I don't ever recall anyone getting injured. Long bit of string and you tie the door knocker and then you'd pull it as taut as you could and you'd go to the house across the terrace and you'd tie the string onto that knocker and then you'd knock at the doors and run away and the people who lived in the houses would be trying to open their doors. Or this is an awful thing, but after Christmas when people would discard, if they had a Christmas tree, they'd just discard them, and of course we'd get them. And we'd go to, it didn't matter whose house it was, but we'd go and we'd stand the Christmas tree against the front door, and of course we'd knock on the door and then we'd run away, so when the lady would come out and open the door, the tree would fall on top of her. It was different, like. I think what we're all very proud of too is that a lot of people who lived in Sarsfield's Terrace, there were lots of firemen. Even today we have Coast Guards living there, you know, and when the first ambulance came to town, one of the ambulance drivers was Malachy O'Connell, who worked opposite Frank Murphy. I can still see Malachy lived across the road from us, and he'd come home every evening, but he'd park the ambulance up in St. Raphael's. And having mentioned Malachy, then imagine today we have Malachy's son, who's Professor Michael O'Connell, who was the master of the Coombe Hospital in Dublin. We have Professor Gene Dempsey, he's in charge of the maternity hospital in CUH. And I mean, they were, Gene practically lived with us. And Michael, as a kid, just come over and back. So that's fantastic. As I mentioned, Angela Loughlin became the nursing director in St. Raphael's. And lots of other people have done wonderful, wonderful things. We had Father Jose, Lord of Mercy on him. And I mean, that was fantastic for the terrace as well. The one thing I'm very proud of doing is that I was instrumental in getting Sarsfield's Terrace one-way traffic. And I always remarked after that happened, when Sarsfield's Terrace became one-way traffic, I was the only person living in the terrace without a car. When we were growing up and going to school, and then Parks was another place that, you know, you go to Parks on a Sunday or whatever. But there were ourselves, there were the Kenefics. they were the Flemings, they were the Ahers, and we'd all call for each other, and we'd go to school together, we'd go to parks together. But we spoke about the top of the terrace. But if you come down to the end of the terrace and turn either side again, left or right, let's say if you came to Tom Wall's way, you had Captain Noonan's, where there are houses built now. I mean, I remember the big red-bricked house that was there. And on the corner, there at O'Brien's Terrace, where John Daly lives now, and the other houses along it, that was the orchard. Many's the time we went in and all that. But Mrs. Noonan, who lived there, my God, I don't remember too much about it, but I know that was once a year she used to pay for all the kids in the terrace, whoever was wanted to go to the movies, to go to the cinema. From back to where we kind of started about when a person would pass away, like as kids, if somebody died in Sarsfield's Terrace, we were told, go in now and kneel down and say a prayer, which we did. I mean, I can remember lots of houses going into where somebody had died, but jumping on a few years then, I remember I came home from Merrick's, when I worked in Merrick's, and I came home on Friday, and my mother said that a guy had called and she had paid him a deposit for new windows, okay? At the time, people were getting new windows in. And I said, fine. Anyway, he was a shyster because we rang him and we phoned or wrote to him and sent solicitors letters, but there was no sign of anyone coming back to put the windows in, right? And at the time, RTE had a consumer program on the TV and I wrote to them. And they took up her case. RTE actually came down and they filmed at the top of the terrace for 2 days. I have some lovely pictures that they took. Now, who was one of the presenters, she's Anya Lawler, she'd be on the programme there on a Sunday. And they were very taken with my mother. They bought her a lovely cake and everything, you know. And thankfully, a few weeks after, we got all our she got all her money back. As did the other people that had, I don't even remember the guy's name now, but my God, it was an awful thing to do to people. For some reason, my mother never went to anyone's house, but everybody came to her house. And they'd sit outside in the summer and they'd be knitting and they'd be chatting. And, you know, like if you think back now, I mean, Madeleine Roach now, who was a relation of ours, she came from Ryan Park and she used to always come over to my house. She was like an aunt to us, like, you know. And they used to have, we were young enough to be chased out, because they'd be having private conversations, you know. And one recollection of Madeleine coming one evening and their favourite programme, Dallas, okay? And my mother was in one chair and Madeleine was on the other. Now, Madeleine never had a family. My mother had all of us. And I think it was what they'd call a sex scene, if I can use the word. And it was JR and Sue Ellen inside in bed. And my mother was, like, she was hiding her eyes because she thought it was awful. And poor Madeleine is sitting there. We were chased. And I can still see Madeleine putting her arm across on my mother's arm. And she said to her, it's okay, Maggie. Yes, she said, they'll have to come up for air in a minute. And that was the innocence of it, like, do you know? So God help us if they saw some of the stuff that it's on now. Oh my gosh. The day now that you'd walk up Sarsfield's Terrace, you could walk from the bottom to the top and, okay, you'd see someone and you'd salute and all that. But the days of standing and chatting and stuff, but people are busy. My dad, when he was able, he used to wallpapering, which I love doing now. And he wallpapered for Bernie's mother, for Mrs. Crowley. But he also did, there was a lady at the very end of Sarsfield's Terrace, and her name, I was delighted to see her name on the register. And she was, it says Catherine Dudley. We know her as Mary Kate Dudley. The very end house in Sarsfield's Terrace next to Ryan Park. And I can remember my dad, he was wallpapering there and he brought me with him. And I wasn't the size of the table. But I can remember this lady and she had a biscuit in and she opened it and it was the most beautiful cake and she gave me a slice of cake that was practically bigger than myself. And it's something that always sticks with me. lads, you know. So they were wonderful people. And if you came just across the inn, then you had Grady. There was a Grady lady who lived there. But there was Bridgie and Mossy Nunn, who lived in number 5. Noel Conway is actually living there now. He used to live up in number 81, and she swapped with a bigger family who lived down at the end because they had lots of kids. And people were going to do that, like. The rent man was Leo Whelan. He lived in the house down by the Regal Cinema, and he used to come every Saturday. And it was a great threat over us, I think over all the children in the terrace, that if you misbehaved, I'll tell Mr. Whelan now and he'll take it to Greenmount. That was the threat, like, you know. And, oh my God. When my dad died in 1976, I can remember how we did it, I don't know, but the first telephone in Sarsfield's Terrace was up at Mrs. Smith's house. And yeah. Going up there to ring Canada, I still can't remember what we did or who we rang, or but they got the news anyway that their father had passed away, because one of them came home. They came home. But I think one of the sadder things about when an older person passes away is the amount of history that goes with them. That's why I think something like this is wonderful. You know, because we don't, I mean, at home now, if we're talking about something, a few years back we could say, I'll ask this person or I'll ask that person, but they're all gone now, and so that we've no one to ask, you know. We have no one who would remember or who would know. That's why this is so important.
And
children were very plentiful in terraces like Sars, and in the 1940s and 50s, it was not unusual to have families with 6, 8 or 10 kids. When you think of the 81 houses of Sarsfields Terrace, the total number of children must have averaged around 300. And now we'll hear from Tom Welsh, Tommy Crowley and Michael Broderick on their memories of Sarsfields Terrace.
I was born in 45, and I suppose my earliest memory of Sars would be 49. At the moment I don't remember further back than that. And I suppose it was being out playing with all the kids in the neighbourhood, of which there were droves and droves. I was at the top end of Sarsfields Terrace. There was a major distinction between the bottom and the top. Or so we thought at the time, anyway. Some of us thought we were looking down on others. Obviously, that wasn't the case. But that was one of my earliest memories, was out playing with everyone. And alongside that would be the trip down to town in the hope that you might get a sweet or a couple of sweets, catching the mother's hand and that. They were very, very pleasant days. There was plenty to do, lots of activities with no toys. It was what you made up, what you were content with. You'd probably feel that you were, after doing very well, if you got a hoop of a bike, you'd go off cutting your stick to push that along. That was one of the biggest things in summertime that people did. Rolled hoops around the place, had races.
I was born there in 1950, and my earliest memory would be like Michael going out playing with the rest of the lads of my size and age at that time. And we'd have had great fun. We'd play with marbles, and Michael's brother Billy, they'd be better than us, they'd be cuter, and they'd be able to get a lot more marbles than we were. And we could play marbles on the footpath, and there was no cars passing up or down. Go to see films and things like that, go see maybe Ray Rogers and play Cowboys and Indians on the way home. But everybody wants to be the cowboy. Nobody wants to be the bad guy.
I was born in 1953. Don't remember it, but I take care of his dear. But anyway, about 5 or 6 in the pole at the end of the terrace well. Do you remember that?
I don't.
No. Fell across. And Willie Ruxton went out with his belt and pulled the wires away and that, like, to make sure no one would get, like, killed. But lucky enough, I fell into the garden, broke the railings all right, but there was nobody injured anyway.
And what year was that?
To be around the 50s again, like, 50s,
I wouldn't, yeah. What's the earliest memory you have of Sars Terrace?
It would have to be 46. My grandfather, my lived next door, and been up to him, and he'd cancer. And he had noise, and he said, I get down to him, whoever he is. But that's not my only recollection of him. I was very young. So he died in 46, depending on what month, but we'd say in a half near or four.
A long, long time to have any affluence in Sarsfields Terrace, though. A lot of people got by being good neighbours, by trading supplies. Even I remember my mother used to make clothes out of clothes. She'd maybe make something out of the girls' dresses and pass them on to people if they were unsuitable for the rest of our own family. And I remember Roaches across the way from us, Nadine and Sally Roaches, they'd bake pancakes. I forget what you call them, is it pastille cakes? Big cake in the pan on Sundays, and they'd have people from all over tasting, sampling, eating that. My mother would make apple tarts, jam tarts and stuff like that. And it was a very neighbourly kind of a thing to do. That's how we lived the earlier years of my life anyway. It was all being good to each other, but everybody knew each other so very, very well that there was no problem with that. Now it's so different. Nobody seems to know who they're living alongside now compared to long ago. So yeah, we had lots of interesting times. And I remember on major GAA match days, there'd be a few radios in a few of the houses, those that had them, and they'd be put on at full volume so that as many as possible could hear it. And the footpaths, they were lined mainly with women sitting out, yeah, if it was a fine day, gossiping and listening to the matches, and teams of kids running all around the place. They were good times.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, what will be. When I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart, what lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, what will be. Now I have children of my own. They ask their mother, what will I be? Will I be handsome? Will I be rich? I tell them tenderly, que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, what will be, que sera, sera.
But after you had the women, we say they came out after doing their work in the summertime, and they'd have a skipping rope, and they'd be skipping, you know, and talking over to one another. You'd more doors open than closed, and now you don't see a door open at all. You know,
it's a heavy door open because nobody had it.
And the only care on the terrace was Tommy Hosey's, and he gone up, he might stop sitting there in the back, there was a spring gun at the end.
Yeah, the bonfire night was a big night.
It was a big night.
You'd be gathering branches, mostly illegally for weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
But it was... it was a very exciting thing at the time. I suppose it was also very dangerous because it was held down by the plot.
Two green areas, in the middle of two green areas. Yeah. And it was in the middle of the road.
It was in the middle of the road. Well, there was no traffic.
No traffic,
to be disrupted because nothing came up or down.
One car a day would come up. That was the doctor up to Central.
Oh, yeah.
Or sometimes they're delivering something that You know, we'd be playing hurling in the towers.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be annoyed if a car came up. It did not right to be there.
And another interesting thing about Sales Terrace at the time, them houses were built without bathrooms.
Mm.
And the ones at the lower end, your loos were downstairs.
Downstairs, yeah.
Yeah, ours, from our house up, they were upstairs. But it was absolutely crazy to build at that time without having the bathroom built in. But they were obviously built as cheaply as possible because they were council houses. And I remember my father built on galvanised structure and made a bathroom out of it. And it was the first one. We thought we were on the pig's back that we could boast about having a bathroom. So most other people followed on very shortly afterwards. A necessity of life, and wasn't provided. There were seven in our family, seven children. Thomas, how many did you?
Well, my father died, I was only 1954, I was only four. But there had been seven in the fourth family.
Yeah.
And three of them died as babies. But my mother got married again, and the seven of them are still alive.
My God.
Mm.
And Tommy, you had a small family.
Very small family, only five altogether in the house.
Yeah.
But in our house, there was a fireplace in each of the bedrooms.
And I think there were a small
fireplace in each of the bedrooms.
Well, in our house, there was one fireplace upstairs, you know.
Yeah.
But with the range, when they died, and the breath gone up, would be grand and warm, like, you know. Well, I didn't see the fire upstairs lighting very often because you're lucky to have the one.
The home was expensive then as well.
We had a shower installed one time, all right. My two aunts came from America in 1951, mother sisters, and one of them had a son, John Kelly. So, anyway, they were playing and stuff. And he came up to my mother, he says, where's your shower room? And we were lucky. My uncle was living next door, he wasn't married yet, so we had the use of the two gardens for vegetables and that, like, it was very handy. Mother used to like the garden and feed the hose. So she said, have you got a swimming trunks? Yeah, go up and change into them. He came down, he stood in the yard, and the Biden were. She threw the hose over. Now she said, shower away. She was first disappointed that her sister should have told them what to be prepared for, like, you know, that there was what was in the house and that, but anyway.
I went to the campus for 8 o'clock in the morning. It'll have 5, I think it was.
Well, I was working in Seafield at 14. I was only there, worked in there. Was it 8 to 6?
My mother died when I was 12, and my father was after having a very serious accident. He worked on the council at the time, and he slipped off the roof of the market house, and he was up and down to hospital. Times were very, very difficult as a result of that, but the neighbours helped out. They were very good. They looked after us. They more or less took turns coming in to see that we were okay. But with a little bit of compensation my father got, he built a small shop down at the end of our terrace. It isn't, I think it's gone now altogether.
It's gone.
And I came out of school to help to to run that. And it was very, very small shop. But the basics were there, and most of the people in Sarsfield's Terrace used it. And most of it was on a credit line. And that's the only way people could survive in them days. And people were very, very honest. They were very decent the way they went about things. They kept us going for a few years. So I didn't start in one of the factories as a young fella, but I did come back into them at a later stage. I left Jarl when I was 17 and a half. Friend of mine, Teddy Roach, from across the road, we went to England. We got work there. Well, I suppose it would be because people were growing up, and there were too many in the house, and there was no privacy, and the opportunity was there. Dennis Fallon was in every couple of days, and it was taking people away every couple of days. Some went to England, some, I suppose there was a good few joined the Army and the Navy because they were good, solid jobs at the time as well.
1960 I went to England. My sister sent the fare, and the fare from the Oil Station to get the train up to Cork. When the Sven left the quay, bought you over to Fishguard, and the train up then to London, £5.
Good bit of money then.
She sent the fare, like.
Yeah.
There was a load, and there were a lot of people from Yall that were over there that I didn't even know until I went over there. And their ambition was to come home, but they were all buried over there. You get used to the thing and if you're there so long, it's very hard to change, like, you know. But the best of people. Like.
We were, a lot of the time, treated a little bit differently to others. And it was quite obvious. We wouldn't mention any names or anything like that. But it was absolute bigotry, really.
Yeah. Where you're living, there's a big red house there, Captain Noonan's. And his wife, he was a very hard man, and he ruled the roost. But his wife was a journalist, it was an English paper anyway. And she had an article on the paper. I would have been too young, but my mother pointed it out. And she called Sarsfield Terrace the black spot. And he'd, and Mikey Terry, working for him. And he'd only one day off in the year. And when Mrs. Flynn used to give him the hot water to make his tea. And I tell you the story about that. So I kind of myself, then the church up there, they used to have jumble sales, like. And we bought a bowler hat, only a penny, playing with it. And we went up. There at the end of the terrace, Captain Owen spotted it. And he said, "Where did you get that?" We told him. "How much did you pay for it?" We said, "A penny." So he said he'd buy it off us for threepence. But anyway, he called Mikey out. And he said, "Mike, would you wear that hat?" "Why would so?" He'd be afraid to say no. "Try it on." Mike put on his head. "We went on back the front, you fool." But he made him, and Mikey wore that till the day he finished up there. He was there all the way down where the houses are. There was an archer down there, and we'd be climbing over the wall. But he'd him blocking holes, the grips and that. He'd have a bucket of cement, no trowel, put it in with his hand. He was treated terrible.
He was, yeah. We used to pick fruit for Captain Newman.
Yeah.
A penny a pound for gooseberries, strawberries, blackcurrants. You'd fill a basket and there was supposed to be a stone in it. £14 in old money. And if it was any bit shy, you didn't get the 14 pence. You went back down and picked some more. My father worked for him as a handyman.
But who taught me this? Michael Stack, he's dead now. He lived down in O'Brien's Tower.
Yeah.
And he was out in the, and then he held the other one and shouting, but fellas went out from the orchard, you know, and Captain Owen after him. And he's shouting, scum of the earth, scum of the earth. So that got Michael going because he was, you know, he said, shows up to him, if we're like that, so why are you living among us? Oh, he says, I'm Irish too. He was from Tipperary. But he'd done so much time in the English Army.
The British Army. Yeah.
You know, they were very hard to live by. The who actually got the house built was Verling, was his name. He was a solicitor. Gone before my time. Cecil Pratt lived up there for a while.
He did, yeah.
And my mother said, the donor, the houses, the road there, there was only a small little ditch and you got a concrete wall built for us, you know? You know, the Verling did.
Yeah.
My mother said he was a proper gentleman.
There was a small chapel in St. Raphael's, and residents from Safi's house couldn't go to Mester. They'd have to get a pass from
right,
a doctor
yeah,
or something
yeah.
that said they couldn't walk down, go down the jail steps.
Pass on medical grounds.
On medical grounds to go into Mass.
I suppose something that affected an awful lot of people that lived in Sarsfield Terrace is I haven't gone through primary school, maybe a year or two of secondary school. They found they had to leave school to go out to earn. And I suppose potentially an awful lot of people from the area weren't able to get the education that they deserved to get and were never able to pick up for the rest of their lives on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably didn't do as well as they might have done had there not been that shortage of money in their families where they had to go out to work. I think that's one of the regrets in talking with some of the people my age. We would often say that there were very, very intelligent people that seemed to get nowhere. There was no one that I can remember went to college in my time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went to England in 1917. I came home, Christmas 64, and I stayed at home until I got married. I didn't know I was getting married. I didn't plan it. I was 25 when I left. Well,
I left at the end of 1962.
So. No, I left.
You came from the Terrace altogether, where am I at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I left in 1973. I got married and stayed on the hill.
Yeah. And again, it was the women were the strong people in that.
Oh, yeah.
Always the women that do that type of stuff well.
They weren't counsellors, but they could counsel.
Mm. Like any woman bringing her chopping up the steps, and if you were going up, you'd bring the bag. Now, she might be further new, but you'd hang the bag in your gear, she collected it, and that, you know. Like Massey there, he got wheel disease, he drank water out of a well, and there was rats in it. We didn't know it at the time. They thought it was polio. There was a bad sort of it in Cork at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the ambulance called. It was the following Sunday. And they were out in a blanket to him down to bring him out. And there was four women. Come on, Mass. You brought our shop and we'll bring you now.
Mm.
You know?
Nice.
You'd done 3 months in hospital that time, and he was lucky, no after effects, because that was a kind of a disease.
Very lucky,
that,
yeah.
Very lucky.
Even today, you're lucky if you survived it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whelan at number 67 was another deep sea sailor and was much travelled. He married Jenny Lane and they had 4 girls. When Jenny was expecting their 3rd baby, it was told that it may be a boy and that the name would be Patrick. The baby arrived, a girl, to be named Patricia. When the 4th baby was due, Pete was certain that it was a boy and had the name Gerald. Again, it was a girl. This time it would be named Geraldine. Terrace was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland under the Social Benefit Round.